Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Cedric the Entertainer, and a host of other great comedians. Spike's style of comedy goes across the board. He appeals to our silly side, and then he'll flip on us and appeal to our intellectual side. He was the first African-American to have his own game show. He was the host of BET's On the Beat. He also had his own kids show called What's Up, Spike? Spike has done numerous appearances on TV shows such as BET's Comic View, A&E's Evening at the Improv, and Showtime's Laugh-A-Palooza. He's a familiar face to stand-up comedy fans everywhere. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome to the stage comedian Spike Davis. Good evening, Spike. How you doing? Good evening, Spike. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm very good. Listen, welcome to Texas.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for allowing me to come down to your hot state.
Oh, listen, it is hot, isn't it?
It is blazing.
Wow, listen, I called the show last night, and y'all, I got to tell y'all, they killed it. But one thing I noticed when I entered the room, and I got there about 15 minutes early, and I thought I was early because, you know, black folks are typically on colored people's time, but the room was packed when I got there, and the energy was crazy. How does that play into your show that night when you go into the room and you feel the energy of the people?
I tell you what, I love it. People don't understand how much comedians feed off the energy of the crowd, unlike any other art form. You know, musicians can come in and play in a room, and people are talking and drinking and walking around, and they just keep doing their thing. You know, they have their energy to vibe off each other.
Mm-hmm.
But as a comedian, you're up there all alone in that mic, and it's just you and the crowd. You feed off of the energy of the crowd, man. If they're into it, then that gets your juices flowing. It's just, it becomes a big love fest. So,
you know, I mean, and that's what it was last night, because, you know, I'll be honest, and I told Spike this off the air, y'all. I did not know who Spike Davis was because I'm not big on BET, and I didn't know the name Spike Davis. But 5 minutes into the show, I was sliding out of my seat. I mean, you're so funny, and you have this way where you ease up on people, which is kind of like a good interviewer. If you can ease up on your questions, they don't see you coming. I think that's what I saw in you last night. You just kind of eased up and warmed up to the crowd, and then it was just, I mean, everybody then wanted to know more about who is Spike. Well, I don't know about everybody, but me, I wanted to know more about who is Spike Davis. You were so funny. Have you always been funny?
Yeah, I've kind of been the silly guy all my life. You know, I always like to joke around with people, and I played sports growing up, so we would always play, and then after the games and stuff, we would relax and just chill, and everybody would just start snapping on each other, just joking around. So I was always one of the better guys at doing that. So I guess God gave everybody a gift, so I guess that's the gift that he gave me.
So what sports did you play?
I played basketball, and I ran track.
Really? I saw something on YouTube. I saw several things about you on YouTube, and Steve Harvey was mentioning how he saw you years ago when you first began, and he said it's just a matter of time that Hollywood is going to know who Spike Davis is. And I was like, wow, to come from Steve Harvey, that's got to feel good.
Oh, boy, that feels great. Yeah, me and Steve go way back. I remember when Steve was living in Cleveland at the time. This was many years ago. And he would come to Louisville, Kentucky, and perform at the comedy club there. He had some family members that lived in Louisville at the time as well. So he would come down, and we just kind of became friends throughout the years. And he said, man, whenever I blow up, I promise you, I'm going to come back and grab you. I'm going to help you out, man. And lo and behold, he did, man. He's always been true to his word. So I really appreciate that guy. He's like a mentor to me.
No. And I saw Jamie Foxx was saying some really nice stuff about you, too.
Yeah, I go way back with Jamie as well. My manager at the time was really good friends with his manager, and he brought Jamie to Louisville for really his first road gig in that area of the country. And nobody really knew who Jamie Foxx was at the time. But we ended up hitting it off and becoming good friends and throughout the years. And I'd go to L.A. and do stuff and go by his house and play basketball and all that sort of thing. So he's always been just real cool guys, man, Steve and Jamie. They're the keep-it-real kind of guys. I like those dudes.
Really? Now, I understand Spike Davis is just the stage name that you're actually – that's not really your real name.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where does the nickname Spike come from?
Well, I was working at UPS at the time, and my employees just started calling me Spike. We had a bunch of people with S's on the front of their names, So because I had a lot of employees at the time, we just started giving everybody a name that started with S. And then in turn, they said, well, we're going to change your name also. I'm like, well, what the heck? Go with it. So they started calling me Spike. And then when I started doing stand-up comedy, I said, well, I'll just hang on to the name. You know, I tried it out at open mic night, and it just kind of stuck. So here I am.
And you know, and I understand your UPS crowd is the one that got you into comedy. I mean, you had a management job, which most folks y'all would consider a good job to be a manager at UPS. And
right.
your crew at UPS is the one that took you to an open mic or told you to go to an open mic?
Yeah, they talked me into going down on a Tuesday night and trying out the open mic night because we were clowning around always on the belt. We call it the belt, and it's the area where they sort packages. And we would joke around in that little area all night. And they said, man, you need to go try this out. I think you can do this. And I kind of had the bug just a little bit anyway because I used to sit around and listen to George Carlin and Richard Pryor and all those old tapes and stuff, even Bill Cosby back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what the heck? I think I can do this. So we went down, and I tried it out. Boy, it went great. That's the worst thing that could have happened, man. Once it goes great, you feel like you can just do it. It's going to be easy.
Your first night you killed it.
I killed it.
No. Wow. And so did you then know, it's bye-bye UPS, I'm going to do this?
Yeah. I tell
no.
you, I got the bug. I got the bug from that point. I hung on for a little bit. I tried to hang on in there, you know, and keep working a regular job and still going to school. I was working at night and then going to school during the day. And after a while, it just wasn't me. It wasn't me. You got to find your call and you just got to go for it. You only get 80 years on this planet, so you better make the best of it.
Ooh. You said something like it gave you a certain rush when you got up there. Describe that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just like, I don't know if people are listening now, if you're really into exercising or running, or sometimes you get that runner's high or that exercising high, you get such a rush when you get that laugh from people. And it's just like a feeling of power. I was able to create something, put that something out there in the air, and have those people respond to it in a positive way. You feel like, man, this is just, wow, this is a feeling that you can't really describe. Euphoria.
Euphoria. And I understand this is like 18 years later.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Still got it. Still in love with it. It's
did
like getting married to your soulmate.
Did the 18 years go by really fast?
I'm sorry?
Did the 18 years go by really fast?
They did. They
yeah.
did, actually. I guess because I don't really feel like I'm working.
Wow.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, you're still doing comedy, man. Don't you get burned out? I'm like, you can't get burned out on something you love.
Wow. So they said you know your calling when it's something that you would do for free. Do you feel that way about comedy?
Oh, yeah. I was already doing it for free. So now I'm just getting paid for it and still doing the same thing. So, yeah, that is very true.
And you said that you were in college studying to be a doctor. How did someone get off the path to wanting to be a doctor to wanting to be a comedian?
Well, I came from a family of people that were into the medical field. You know,
really?
My mom, she was a nurse for 23 years, and my aunt, she was a registered nurse for 20-something years. Seemed like everybody around me worked at hospitals, and we were just all hospital people. And coming up, got a scholarship offer from Humana to go to school to be a doctor, so I studied biology. And, you know, I was dragging into class every day, and I was liking it, but I really wasn't loving it. So, man, when I got the bug from this comedy thing, it grabbed me and held on to me, and it's still burning within me even to this day. You know,
wow.
I'm always going to be doing something in the entertainment realm. Even if I retired from stand-up comedy at 70 years old, I would still be in the entertainment realm in some way.
You know, and that seems to kind of be evident when I was mentioning in your bio, you did a kid show, you've done your own game show. So, like, wow, you kind of move around. You're not, like, just doing one thing. You're really trying to, you know, get out there and put your name out there. How was doing the kid show? You did a show called What's Up, Spike? What was that about?
It was a career-oriented show, but it was for younger kids. It was based towards younger kids, trying to get them to start thinking on that path of what you want to do and who you want to be in a more serious way. You know, we'll ask kids sometimes, you know, what do you want to be? And then we'll just kind of drop it. But
yeah.
I think we kind of need to keep it in the forefront of their minds because, you know, time keeps moving. And so while you're spinning your wheels trying to figure out what you want to do and where you want to go, time is still moving. Next thing you know, it's 25 years later and you're sleeping on your mom's couch in the basement, still not figuring out what you want to do and where you want to go. So we started out with those little 9-year-olds and then 10-year-olds and kind of started grooming their minds by getting them in that direction of, I have to find a vocation, but I have to find a vocation that I love.
Wow. And you know, your bio says you've opened for like Steve Harvey, Jamie Foxx, Cedric the Entertainer. Those are like some really big names in the business. Who do you look up to?
Actually, I look up to all those guys. Because all those guys, they're all pioneers. They've done things that have kicked down doors to a lot of places that we wouldn't have access to. You know, they're the newest pioneers. You can go back to Rudy Ray Moore and all of those guys, Pigmeat Markham, Fred Sanford, our Red Fox at the time. You know, you go back to those guys. But right on the heels of those, you got Chris Rock, and you have the Jamie Foxes of the world that have also made an indelible mark in this game as well. You've been able to go to play Madison Square Gardens, or the Apollo Theater. Of course, we've always had that avenue. But then you've been able to cross over into some venues where we weren't able to go in the front door. You know, we had to go into the colored doors or the Negro doors throughout the South, and now they kick those doors down, you know, in a modern kind of way. So I look up to all those guys.
Wow. Because, you know, I saw something online about you where you said you went on at first trying to be Eddie Murphy, and then you decided you wanted to do, you were just going to do Spike. And you said one thing that people will see, or several things that people will see when they see your act, is that they will see clever, clean, and fresh. Does that describe your act?
I think it does, without sounding too arrogant, but I do. I think that kind of describes who I am. You know, everybody has their own, calling card, their own persona on stage, but I think that kind of nails who I am. I'm not too, I don't get too raw. You know, I don't get too deep. I don't think comedy is the time to really get too deep. Some comedians go on with their commentary, but everybody has their different styles. I'm more of the happy guy. I want to pour some joy out of you. I want you to come in with some burdens and then leave with some joy.
Wow. And so, when you originally went out saying I'm going to do like an Eddie Murphy, why Eddie Murphy? What did you see in his comedic act that you thought you would you know, hone in on?
The way he commanded stage.
Wow.
You know, Eddie, when he came out and did Delirious and Raw.
Yeah.
Whether you liked his material or not and you thought it was too dirty, you know, beyond that, he commanded that stage. And I liked the way he had that crowd in the palm of his hand. Whatever direction he wanted to go with that crowd, they were going to go because he already had them. So I kind of patterned myself after that kind of energy, maybe not material-wise, but just that kind of energy and command of the stage.
Wow. So when you go out there, it is your intention to get 100% of the crowd. You want everything.
Oh, yeah. You know, we talked about that earlier, man. All comedians, I think we're all like this. We're a little anal.
Really?
You know, if there's one person in that crowd that is not laughing, you will stop your show and focus on that one person out of the 500 that are laughing.
Really?
For some reason, we want to get everybody on the same page.
Wow, y'all going to be like the shepherd. You're going to go back and get the lost one, too.
That's us. That is us, man. I've seen it. You know, we discuss it backstage after the show is over. You know, we sit back there and we're like, man, it was a good show. It was a great crowd. Did you see that one guy? He's in the third row over to the left, that fourth table. You remember him? Yeah, I saw him. He was just sitting there staring the whole time. Like, what is up with that?
Really? And so when you're out there and you're in your zone and you're doing your thing, what happens when that heckler, you know, decides he's not feeling you and he's going to give you a hard time?
You know, there's in my book, two kinds of hecklers.
Oh.
Sometimes you'll get a heckler that wants to heckle just to, you know, I guess he feels like he's helping the show. You know, so he's not doing it in a mean kind of mean-spirited way.
Wow.
And then you have hecklers that are basically trying to disrespect you and say, you're not funny, you know, you're not worth my time, you shouldn't be up there, and trying to get the crowd, you know, to turn on you. And that's when you have to go berserk. You have to, again, command the stage, and you got to rip that guy in half.
Really? So you say this is my 30 minutes or this is my 2 hours or however long you're up there, and you demand that just be your time and you will not share it?
No, I will not. I will not, especially to someone that's going to try to disrespect my art. Because every joke that I put out there, that's one of my kids. I
wow.
created that. And for you to reject my kids, you know, parents don't take that very well.
So when you're creating jokes, where does it come from? I mean, how do you hear something or see something and say, I got to use that?
Everyday life, just things kind of just fall in your lap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to, years ago, sit down and write, you know, physically write out jokes, mm-hmm. how I was going to say it and exactly every line. And then you got to the point where you just kind of did little setups where you would just put down a premise on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, you get on stage and you kind of write while you're going. You know, something strikes you funny as you're talking or as you're kind of going back and forth with somebody in the crowd. So you kind of do it in a reverse way. You got your normal set that you're going to do. But in the middle of that normal set, you might have something that will come up right there on the spot, and you'll kind of just throw something out there. If it works, you'll hang on to it, take it to the next city with you.
Wow. And, you know, and looking at you all do what you do, and y'all did it so very well last night, I must admit. If y'all are anywhere near the Dallas-Fort Worth area, get to the Improv tonight. I think tonight's the last night, right?
Yeah, we have two shows tonight, and then that'll be it for this weekend.
Wow. So your shows are at what time tonight?
The 7:30 show, and then there's a 10 o'clock show.
Wow. Y'all be in the building. That's all I'm saying. It was crazy. But, you know, when I'm watching y'all do what y'all do, and I'm looking and I'm paying attention, it took focus, it took time, and it took rhythm. What else does it take to be a great comedian? I mean, those are just the things I observed.
Courage. Courage beyond
courage.
Anything. You know, you got to step out there and just know that you can do this. Because the audience can pick up on fear.
Really?
You know, if you're a little apprehensive, you know, the audiences are like sharks. They can smell blood in the water. So if you're not believing in what you're saying, then they're not going to believe in what you're saying. They're not going to latch on to whatever concept you're trying to throw out there. It might be funny, but if you're kind of tentative with it, you know, you can just lose the crowd at that point. So you just have to be all the way in.
But you know what, and you know, and I know, life happens. And so if you get a phone call from home and, you know, something happened at the house and you know, you need to get back, but you know you got a show that night, how do you put that in the corner until you go do what you do on stage? How do you do that? How do you compartmentalize that?
You know, I don't know the biology of how you're able to do it, but I just know it's done because we're regular people just like everybody else, so... You know, you're just about to go on stage, and your wife calls and says, you know what, this ain't working. I'm going to go ahead and pack my things, and you have a good life. Well, the show is already seated, and everybody's waiting. So you just have to go with it.
Wow.
You know, sometimes if it's something that painful, you're better off just going up there and throwing it out there.
Wow.
You know, give it to the crowd.
My wife just called me and told me she's going to leave me.
Yeah, yeah. They'll think it's funny, but they don't know. You might even laugh with them, but they don't know that's the reality of it. But that energy will come out so strong that they'll latch on to it.
Wow. And you know, I heard you say on stage last night, you got a wife and three kids. And so, you know, when you've done this all week, do you go home and still find yourself to be the funny man, or do you turn it off when you get to the house?
I can't turn it off.
Really?
I'm a nutcase. Even my wife, you know, everybody has their little marital spats and little arguments and stuff. And I'm still goofy. I'm still goofy in the middle of it. We have serious moments, but, you know, if you looked at my life for the most part, 80% of it is me joking around and just not taking life too serious, man. You know, the serious moments are going to come, so don't force it. You know, try to push it the other way. Whatever you're arguing about or whatever disagreements you're having, just write it down on paper. I say it out loud. And in the grand scheme of things, you realize how small it is.
Wow. So you find the humor in everything?
I try to.
Wow.
I try to in some of the most awkward situations. Usually end up being the funniest situations, especially like going to church, man. And when you're not supposed to laugh, that's when you will rip your gut in half trying to hold it in.
Oh, and you know, and you had a lot of that in your act last night about church folk, and I really found that funny because you know you broke it down in a way that probably the rest of us see it but couldn't articulate it, and I found that just so elaborate the way that you could lay it out about exactly what you'd experience in the church.
Oh yeah, I mean I was born and raised in the church. My dad was a deacon, and also he sang in a gospel quartet. My mom was a deaconess and, of course, an usher, and she sung in the choir. So, yeah, I come from a church background. You know, we were born and raised at the church. Church on
Sunday. So you're a Christian?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
So you have to be careful because your mom and them looking at you if your act ain't too clean anyway, right?
Well, you know what? My mom is hilarious. My dad is no longer with us on this side, of course, but mom is still with us, and she's 80-something years old, and that lady is hilarious, I'm telling you.
Wow. 80-something?
Yes, indeed. Mom is 83 this year.
And you live in the Atlanta area, and I'm sure there's a lot of material down there. I mean, seriously, you know, from the things I hear about Atlanta.
Yeah.
And so where do you get like, your material from? I mean, where does the bulk of your material come from? Does it come from, like, watching people or watching world events? Where does most of your stuff come from?
I'm a big people watcher. And I think probably most comedians are. We're very aware of people, very aware of our surroundings. And I think that's how we're able to do what we do, because we analyze everything that we walk into. We never just walk in and sit down in a situation where we're oblivious to what's going on. Taking it all in, compartmentalize it in your brain, and then spew it out later in a way that, you know, most people say, wow, I didn't really think of it like that.
Because I was looking at or paying attention to your material, and I was looking at how, you know, some of the jokes were just set up. I mean, and I call them like being set up like dominoes or set up like bowling pins. And so in your mind, and I am struggling with good memory lately, you seem to have like a phenomenal memory to just, you know,
right.
How much memory room do you need to put all that together?
I have no idea, but I think we all have large hard drives in our brains. All comedians do, especially when you've been doing it this long, you know, to grab that much material and spew it out there, but then hang on to it at the same time. You know, I got jokes from probably, I don't know, almost 20 years ago where you're sitting down writing on little pieces of scrap paper and that sort of thing. And then you started out with a set. You had 5 minutes that you worked on. I've got to get me a good 5 minutes. Then you're like, man, I got to get me a good 15. And then by the time you got a good 20 minutes, you felt like you were able to go to a club owner and say, look, I can at least open up for you. I might not be able to feature a headline, but I can open up. I got 20 hot minutes. So, and you just kept working on it and working on it. And the rhythm of it became who you are and your set. So you could do it with your eyes closed. I can do my set backwards.
You know, and you opened up last night for LaVell Crawford, which is, you know, a very funny man himself. How do you go into it knowing that you're opening for somebody that funny? You got to come with it when you got somebody like that headlining. How do you do it? How do you hone in, like, okay, I got to bring it, or do you just do you?
A little bit of both.
Really?
A little bit of both. I mean, I always just do me, but you got to understand, whatever you is, you better bring it. You know, because the people have paid their money to come out to see a good show. You know, they came out to see the headliner in most cases because, just like you said, you didn't know me. You didn't know I was going to be there. And I heard that from a lot of people throughout the whole weekend. I didn't know you were going to be here. I didn't know you were on the show. And I didn't know you were going to be that funny because they said you were in an opening act. So already in people's minds, they're thinking, oh, this guy's going to be less than. So you kind of got something to prove to the crowd as well, and to yourself. So you want to kind of really bowl them over to let them know, because I have this title doesn't mean this is the position I'm supposed to be in. It's just where I am right now.
But exactly. And so when you go out there every show, you don't consider yourself like an opening act. You consider yourself like, this is my opportunity to shine, and I'm going to take every opportunity and kill it. Because,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I consider myself the first headliner going on stage. You know,
wow,
LaVell's the last headliner going on, but I'm the first one going up. And somebody's got to be first. So I'm opening for myself. I'm the opening act for myself. That's why I do that little thing up front where I kind of find out who's got birthdays, who's got anniversaries, who's got those sort of things. Just a little pep rally to get people going. That's me opening for myself before I even get into my material, just to get some energy in the room.
And you know, and I did kind of appreciate that because, you know, it kind of made the audience interact with you, you know, and makes them kind of, you know, feel like they were included in your show somewhat. And I thought that was clever.
Yeah, I think you have to do that on a two-man show. You know, sometimes you'll get on a show where there may be a house MC. So that kind of really takes the pressure off of me where I could just go out and just do my show. But when I have to do both, then, you know, I like it. I enjoy it. I don't complain about it at all because it just gives me more stage time to, again, push myself out there and my name out there as well.
Now, last night, y'all, there was no heckling in the building and there was no booing. But what do you do when you're booed? How do you handle that?
Booing and heckling are right there. They're the ugly cousins.
Wow.
So normally you just have to go right back at that person. It's usually just one person that tries to start it anyway. So you just have to go and just grab him by the neck, figuratively, and choke him out. And then once you put that little fire out, if you do it in the right way, it can actually be to your benefit. So,
you can't
always
ask
win.
A heckler or a person who booed you to leave because they bought a ticket, but you have to verbally shut them down.
Oh, yeah, you got to do that first and foremost. The club can throw them out. If they're still belligerent and they don't shut up, then, you know, the club has to get rid of them because they're ruining the experience for everybody else. But if they're trying to say a little something and trying to test you and you squash them, and everybody knows you're winning, even the crowd knows that you're winning, they've had enough of that. They don't want that for a whole 30 minutes, a whole 45 minutes.
So are there any clubs that you've done that you say I ain't going back? I mean, that was just like more than I need, and I'm just not going to do that kind of show or that show again or that particular club again?
Well, most of the clubs that we're playing now, you know, the Improvs, the Funny Bones, you know, the established clubs, you don't have to worry about that. But it's just when you have to do those one-nighters, you know, kind of the barroom situation or the nightclub kind of, or a dance club kind of situation where they try to do comedy night inside of one of those clubs. That's when you run into those hecklers that aren't there for comedy. You know, they're there to dance or whatever and have a drink, or maybe it's somebody's birthday party. So they feel like you're in the way. So they try to ruin your night because I guess they feel like you're ruining their night. So those kind of situations I try to steer clear from. I don't do a lot of those anymore. It has to be a controlled environment for me. I don't want to have to fight with you to make you laugh.
Right.
Those two things don't go together. I can't make you laugh anyway. Nobody can make you laugh. You have to come in with that spirit of, I'm going to have a good time, and then I'll help you take it to the next level. But if you come in and not laugh, you're probably not going to laugh.
So it's a mindset when they come into the club.
Oh, yeah. When people come into comedy clubs, then they know they're coming into a comedy club, so they have a different mindset. As opposed to coming into a dance club where we're going to do comedy first and then we're going to move the tables and chairs and we're going to dance. You'll have the people that come to dance a little bit early, right during the comedy show, and they're ruining everything for everybody else. So, again, I steer clear of those. I've been blessed where I've done a lot more colleges. I've done a lot more comedy clubs. And I've done a lot of churches and those sorts of things, those kind of events where I've hosted them and also performed on them. But that's my love there, you know. Doing the church shows. I enjoy doing gospel comedy more than I do anything.
Really? You know, I've heard people talk about in the past the Chitlin Circuit. Did you ever have to go? I mean, in these 18 years that you traveled the Chitlin Circuit?
Oh, yeah. We all did the Chitlin Circuit. I remember years ago, Mike Epps. I met Mike Epps years ago, and we used to ride around doing those little one-nighters. You know, we get in the car, man, fill up the tank and roll out. You know, Mike Epps was one of those people that rode with me. Ricky Smiley was another person, old road partner. You know, Lavelle was one of my old road partners. I know Lavelle from 20 years ago. I met him 20 years ago in Louisville auditioning for BET Comic View. We just met and we hit it off, and he was living in St. Louis, and I was living in Louisville. We stayed in touch, and we became fishing partners and everything. So it goes beyond even the stage. We're not just random people that met. You know, that's my boy there.
Wow. So what do you do when it's downtime from, you know, being the funny man? What do you do? What is your thing?
Well, I'm doing a radio show called Spike Davis and Friends Radio Show, and that's based out of Atlanta. So when I'm back home in Atlanta, I'm doing my radio show. And then when I'm not doing the radio show, I'm out golfing and fishing and hanging out with my 9-year-old. My other kids, they're off to college, so they're kind of doing their own thing now. But me and my wife have a little 9-year-old now, so that's my first love, family for sure. Love getting back home, hanging out with him, and the guy's just so funny. He entertains me.
You told me that he may be bitten by the comedy thing too.
I can see it. I can see it because he's so quick and so clever and so smart. A lot of people think it's funny. A lot of people think that comedians are not very intelligent. We're just, you know, man, you stupid, man, you have to, but. You know, quiet as kept, we're very well-read people, you know, very clever people. That's the only way we can be wordsmiths and take situations and make it funny to the average person, because we can see it in a whole different light. So I think he's going to be one of those guys. My son, he loves reading. I mentioned to you before that he taught himself to read at age 1. So we didn't have to wait for your baby can read and all those things. He did it on his own. So he loves reading still to this day. And he takes in little small things that you try to slide a joke past him. You know, I'm talking to my wife or whatever. I try to slide something in. I think I got it past. And he'll have a little comeback. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that's what we were talking about.
Really? And so do you think it's a natural gift? It's not I don't know if I and I'm asking, is comedy something that's learned, or is it a natural gift if you're really good at it?
You know, I'm thinking now that it is something that's it's a gift, and it's given to you. You know, it can be passed on. My mom and dad, as I mentioned before, they were funny people. My dad was hilarious. He was a very clever dude as well. Mom is still to this day, but she's a big cut up. You know, she's always making people laugh. And my older brother, both of those guys, man, are hilarious to me. I get material from them as well, just talking to them. And now I'm doing the comedy thing, and I think my son has it as well.
So you think it's in the family?
I think it is.
Wow.
I think it is. I mean, you look at Chris Rock and Tony Rock. You look at Eddie Murphy and Charlie Murphy. You look at the Wayans family, you know, all comedic actors.
Wow. You know, I asked you earlier that have you ever gone and done a show and you just bombed? And what was your response to that? And how did you tell me that makes you feel if that's the case, if that happens?
Oh, boy, I tell you, that's the most alone you can ever feel in a crowded room of 300 people. To be on that mic, you know, throwing your jokes out there and people just... Worse than being heckled, to me, is to have people silent because you don't know how to react to that. What are you going to say? There's no energy being exchanged. If you heckle me, then I got the opportunity to come back at you. But if you're just staring at me, what do I say? I can't stare back at you because now it's silent and it's really awkward. So you just have to keep plowing through. And if you're scheduled to do 30 minutes, then you have to do your 30 minutes.
I mean, you mean you can do 27 minutes of dead air? I mean, where nobody is just, you know, giving you any energy back?
I've seen it happen. Thank God it hasn't happened to me more than twice in this whole stretch of my comedy career, but it has happened.
Wow.
You know, sometimes you'll be so arrogant because you had a great show the night before that you'll go up there overly confident and not do so well.
Wow.
So you always have to stay
humble.
Has that
ever resulted in you getting fired from a comedy gig?
Never have.
Really?
Never have. I've heard stories where comedians have gotten fired, but that's not too often. You know, normally comics, they'll regroup and be ready for the next night or be ready for the next show. But I think once you get to this level that we're on now, you learn to read your crowds, and those chances, those go away very quickly.
Really? Now, you know, one thing that we discussed off the air was that comedy is about getting involved in controversial stuff, that's really what brings great comedy. Which, I mean, elaborate on that.
Yeah, I think anything that's controversial or painful inherently have comedy inside of it. That's why we have the comedy and tragedy masks. They go together. So, I mean, that brings out a certain... Everybody wants opinionated things that they can talk about. Fiery issues bring out opinions in people. So if you can take that opinion and go a whole different direction with it, you know, that's when comedy is created. But I think if you try to play the safe route, you know, you kind of just become boring. And why would somebody want to listen to somebody with no opinion?
Really? So have you gotten a great deal of material from, like, Obama being our first black president?
You know, I haven't done a lot of political stuff.
Really?
Throughout the years, and I still haven't now, because I still don't know, I haven't found the right angle for Obama.
Wow.
Because as a black president, the best thing you can do material-wise in an all-black room, if you're going to talk about Obama, it's going to have to be all positive.
Wow.
You're going down an extremely dangerous slope if you say anything negative about the first black president. But negative is where comedy comes from.
Right.
So,
now, you know, now LaBelle said it a little bit last night, which was funny. And when he set it up, and he said, "Hey, you know, the first 4 years we give him, but then the second, you know, if he gets in another term, then so you kind of feel like that, like the first 4 years, you know, we had to give him, like, you know, these are his training wheels, and you know he had a lot to clean up behind,
man.
But the next 4 years maybe, you know, you can joke
about
that
honeymoon period right now. You know, it's the same way with Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton got that love, you know, that first time around, man. The comedians didn't really go at him like that.
Right.
But after a while, you know, you become fair game. So I think everybody's kind of writing their jokes and kind of waiting. And then Obama will be a target as well. If you can't do impersonations, you know, then you'll definitely do some kind of material.
Okay. And, you know, and Tracy Morgan got in trouble recently for making some jokes about, and I have not really gone and listened to the tape, and I guess I should have. But he got in trouble for making some jokes that people considered homophobic. Do you feel that homosexuality is a taboo for you to talk about on stage, or is everything fair game?
I think everything's fair game. I think it's all in how you handle that the material and the situation and your setups.
Really?
You know, if it's mean-spirited, then people can pick up on whether it's mean-spirited. If you're just joking for the sake of joking about an issue, and it might be a really hot-button issue like gay marriage and like the gay lifestyle in particular, then if you come at it in a mean-spirited way, even people that may be on your side will kind of pull back too and might not be with you so much. So if you kind of just joke in a lighthearted kind of fashion, I think you can pretty much get away with anything. I joke about everything, everything short of Jesus.
Really?
I don't play with Jesus. I don't play with God. I don't play with the Holy Spirit. I don't joke on those things. I don't think that's an issue that's fair game. But anything short of that, I say have at it.
So you can be in an Atlanta, which everybody says like the gay mecca of the world. You can be in an Atlanta and crack a gay joke and the audience still fail you.
Yeah. Yep,
really?
I've had it happen at the end of the show. I've had people come up to me, gay people that come up to me and still buy DVDs and still want to take pictures with me and say, you were so funny, you know, and they'll let me know that that's their lifestyle. But they wasn't hurt or offended by it because I didn't attack them in a negative way. I'm just putting my opinion out there, and that's why I keep saying throughout my whole act, listen to me closely.
Mm.
I keep saying that over and over again because a lot of times you'll miss the message because you're trying to be angry.
Mm. Okay, so the personal, so you can still say what you feel personally and still, like you say, not be offensive is your target. Just to...
Oh, yeah, we can agree to disagree,
mm.
but it's all in how we do it.
Mm.
You know, if you're a Klansman and you're on stage and you don't like me as a black person, if you're telling a joke about black people in a way that I think is still respectful and tasteful and it's funny, go for it.
Wow. So you feel like what Tracy Morgan got was unfair?
You know what? I'm not really versed on exactly what he said. I just know it was a hot-button issue. And as a comic, sometimes you go out on that comedy limb and you don't realize you're out too far until the branch starts cracking. And I think he might have gotten out there too far and like, oh, boy, you know, how do I get back now? Because I'm out here now. And as I mentioned earlier, you can't show fear because people will pick up on it. So it's really not going to be funny. Now you're stuck in some quandary. So I think that might have been something that he kind of got trapped with. Now he was trying to reel it back in, but might have been too far out there.
But do you go back and apologize and say you're sorry when actually you just knew it was a joke and maybe it wasn't a well-received joke, but it was just a joke?
I think sometimes you can do that as a comic.
Mm.
Audiences love honesty.
Really?
If you say, you know what, that was my fault.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They with you. They'll give you that leeway to come on back, especially if you're Tracy Morgan or if you're somebody on that level. You know, you have that the leeway that a lot of younger comics are not well-known comics won't have.
Wow.
Because they're still trying to learn who you are. People come in pretty much thinking they know who Tracy Morgan is. They know who Jamie Foxx is. So if he says something that's kind of out of the way, they're like, oh, that's just Jamie being Jamie. Oh, that's just Tracy. He does that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I hope they do because, really, I think I don't know the man, but I really don't think he's a mean-spirited person.
Right.
So I was very surprised at how, you know, people took that comment that he made on a comedy show and ran with it like that, because I really just don't believe that he's a mean-spirited comedian. I just don't get that.
Nah, I've met him before. I don't know him personally, but I've met him before, and every time that I've actually come across him, he's really an engaging person.
Wow.
So he's a really nice person. He doesn't have a mean spirit about him at all.
That's what I thought. So I thought the same thing, and I'm hoping that whole thing just kind of blows over. Let me ask you, how do you keep your material fresh? Because, you know, y'all do city after city and state after state. And, you know, when do you know it's time to switch material, and how do you keep it fresh?
You kind of just go with the flow. You know,
mm-hmm.
you'll run across new and different things as you travel. You'll keep your base set of a joke that you know you're going to do. But then you'll still do something. Maybe there's a current event might happen. You may want to touch on that, something that's national, or maybe it's a current event that's happening right there in that city as you're coming in town. So you'll grab a newspaper and find out, you know, as much details as you can about it. And then, you know, after 18 years, you probably got 3 or 4 1-hour sets that you can do. So you kind of rotate those in and out. So it's like a hodgepodge of whatever you're feeling at the time.
And I think you had so much great material last night, but I think the joke that I mean, seriously, I literally slid, I don't know, I just slid almost out of my chair. When you were talking about the lady and her husband being together for so long, and kind of like what happens when you're, you know, like her bra may be pinned up and it don't matter, or what kind of underwear she got on it. And I just found that it was just, I think the whole room was dying.
That's so true, though. I mean, that's comedy right there. Comedy and reality, man. People want real stuff, and that's what's real. Nobody's going to be sexy all their whole lives, throughout their whole lives. You get beyond that stuff. You know, we have some little things and some little quirks and some little things that may bug your partner, but they're able to look over it because chances are they have something too, and you both have something, so you live past it.
And that was the thing I found about your comedy is that that's probably something everybody knew, but no one would know how to put it in words like you did.
I think that's my job, when you
were talking about that joke, and I was rolling because I think every relationship gets to that point where you know it's just okay. It, you know, he knows, you know, it's just okay. But you know, you put it together so elaborately. So I'm just trying to, I guess, and not that I'm ever going to be a comedian, y'all, but I'm just trying to understand how do you get so comfortable in your own skin where you can just let it flow like that and know that the audience is going to receive it.
I tell you what, it's time served. It's time served in the business. That's all it is. It's just getting comfortable on stage where whatever you feel like you want to talk about, you're going to be able to pull the crowd into that because it's not too far off from what they've experienced anyway. You're just calling it to the forefront of their minds because they go about their daily lives dealing with those things and not really knowing that they're dealing with those things. You know, my wife, I love her to death, and she is an extremely beautiful woman. But now we both gotten comfortable with each other. So I take that to the stage. You know, she'll come to bed, man, with her robe on and all bundled up. Well, we were never like that when we first met. You know, the sexy negligees and all those things, they're gone. They're gone. We both come to bed with our hair wrapped up.
So did she get mad when you put her in your act, or has she told you do not talk about me on stage? Because he did not talk about the wife having her hair wrapped last night, y'all. So,
she knows I'm goofy. I'll have points where I'll talk about her. You know, a lot of friends, her friends will come to the show or whatever, and they'll think I'm talking directly about her when I talk about I like fine women that are ghetto.
Ooh.
They think I'm talking about her. They're like, girl, you hear what he said? He called you ghetto. And she knows I ain't talking about her, but it doesn't matter. It's a joke. It's just a joke.
And you know, I heard Steve Harvey say one time that when you pay in the bills in the house, everybody is a potential joke. And if you don't like it, then you something to the effect that you got to leave because you know, that's what pays the bills. So do you kind of look at it like that, that that's what pays the bills, and if it's funny, you're going to tell it?
That's how she looks at it.
Oh, she knows the business already.
Yeah, she knows it.
And so what can you tell the people who may not or have, just like myself, well, you know, like I told you, I did not know who Spike Davis was going into last night, but I definitely will never forget who Spike Davis is. What would you tell somebody about your act who has never seen you? What would you tell them, you know, to expect?
I think they should expect, once again, it's a keeping it real kind of show. When we talk about real things and everyday life situations, and we just put a funny twist on it. But I'm just, I'm a happy comic. You know, you have some mean-spirited comics where they're just frowning the whole time when they're on stage and they got that militant thing going. If that's your style of comedy that you like, you won't really enjoy me. I'm the happy dude.
Wow. Because, you know, Kramer from Seinfeld got in trouble for using the N-word on the show. And I, you know, I didn't appreciate it because I typically don't appreciate white people using the N-word. But how did you take that, or was that okay because he's a comedian?
Oh, no, that's never okay. He went way beyond where he should have went. And I really feel like a lot of comedians, black comedians, I think we need to back off of it.
Really?
You know, I'm not telling people how to live their lives or how to conduct themselves, but I use it very infrequently because I feel like it's really disrespectful. You know, we're trying to come up as a race. We're trying to come up as a people. Why do you keep trying to pull us backwards, you know, in a mixed crowd? It's especially in a mixed crowd. You want to do it where it's a, I call it a ghetto room or a thug room, where that's the language that they speak and that's the vernacular that they're used to, then go for it. But if you're in a improv or a funny bone or a club like that where you have a mixed crowd, I think you just disrespect ourselves to a level that we don't have to do that.
So depending on your crowd, your material can change?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Really?
Without a doubt. You have to sauce it up sometimes, depending on where you are. You know, you have to give it a little more oomph. I mean,
oh, really? Because I was seeing some white people in the room last night, and I was wondering, does that affect how all the jokes are lined up, or does that not factor in at all?
I don't factor them in.
Okay.
I don't factor them in. They need to get on the train. It's such a predominantly black crowd. Then they just need to catch up to where we are. But you know, I feel like my jokes are pretty much universal anyway. And if I do anything black, I'll do a white joke right behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even do that last night. I didn't do the black versus white issues and how we conduct our lives.
Mm-hmm. Has this economy and the way it's going right now, has that affected your comedy at all?
I don't think so. I don't
really
think it has. You know, people are still coming out. People are always going to get entertainment. They're going to get their entertainment value in, no matter what. I don't care what the world's dealing with. Everybody's going to come out, they're going to laugh, and they're going to drink. Now, they might have to make some other sacrifices on other things, but they're not going to stop partying and, you know, just trying to have a good time and relieve that stress. So the comedy industry has not been hurt by the recession one bit, as far as I can tell.
You talked about your radio show earlier. How do they find your radio show?
You can go to my website, SpikeDavisAndFriends.com, and we'll have a podcast on there. That'll be up in the next couple of days, so people can check it out on there. And I'll be on a station called Love 860, www.love860.com. And you can check me out Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time.
Wow. Now, on the Spike Davis and Friends show, what can they expect when they listen into that show?
It's a gospel-oriented show, but it's clean comedy, news and information. We do interviews. We have on different guests. You know, sometimes we'll have on old-school musical guests like Tony Terry. We'll have people on like that. We had a young lady from The Color Purple, the movie The Color Purple, Maria Howe. She was on recently. So we do interviews with celebrities and also we do news and current events. And, of course, you know me. I'm a comedian, so I'm always going to be doing my joking. But it's a clean comedy show for people that want to be able to listen to the radio in the car and not have to click it off just because, you know, I got my kids in the car with me. I can't listen. You know, we do funny jokes where everybody can be included. It's family-oriented. It's a fun
show.
Looks
like I saw on there that you all do things like motivational minutes, rules of engagement, and special house guests. So y'all kind of mix it up.
Yeah, we do rules of engagement. We bring on a lifestyle advisor coach, and we help people get through whatever problems they email in. We have her answer that question. We also do motivational minute. That's how we kick our show off. Of course, we have one of our favorite pastors from around the nation come on and give us a quick little motivational minute, a quick little speech on something to kickstart our day.
Really? Okay. Well, wow. I mean, you know, it sounds like, I mean, really, you're a busy man, you're a Christian man. I understand that you had, like, grown up in a family of, like, all boys.
Yes,
and the whole family supports what you do. Is that true?
They all do. They really do. It's been a real blessing to have people in your corner that see your vision. You know, a lot of times you can tell somebody what you're trying to do and what you want to do, and the first thing they do is start telling you why you can't do it.
Wow.
But I've been blessed to have people that always say, yep, you can do that.
Wow.
You know, that goes a long way. Whether you're a younger person or an older person, man, just to have that positive affirmation from people around you that love you and you love them, and it pushes you a long way. So that's why I don't stress. I don't stress about this business and where I am right now and where I might be in the next few years. I just know God's got me and good things are coming my way.
Wow. And I believe that. And you know what? And I'll be honest with you. I so felt, you know, as Steve Harvey did, that it's just a matter of time when I listened to you last night, because your energy, it was humble, but it was kind of contagious, you know, and you just had this, you know, thing about you that you wanted to know more about who this comedian is. And I, you know, I was shocked, you know, that I hadn't heard of you before, but I, you know, like I said, not a BET person.
Right.
So I hadn't seen you, I guess, probably because most of what you've done has been on BET other than that A&E situation that you've been involved with. And so I think that the really, I kind of got that your timing is just around the corner. I mean, absolutely, because it's impossible to reject someone with the type of talent that you have. I mean, really, it's just, y'all, I'll be honest with you, if you anywhere, again, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I mean, I'd say within a 2-hour radius, you need to try to go to the Improv tonight. They've got 2 shows left. You say it's 7:30, and I think it's 9:30, not 10. Are you sure it's 10 or is it 9:30?
Oh, it may be 9:30. Originally, it was supposed to be 8 and 10:30, but I heard they moved the show times up, so it may be 7:30 and 9:30 now.
Yeah, I think you need to call the Improv in Arlington over on Curtis Mathis Way, y'all, right there off of Matlock Road. Honest to God, absolutely positive. I mean, I'm not kidding. I guess I don't get out enough, y'all, because I have not laughed that hard in 5 years. I absolutely have not laughed that hard because it was just, like you say, the crowd was in it. I mean,
oh,
and
yeah,
they were in it, y'all. And the comedians, you know, both you and LaFell brought it last night, and it was just an incredible time. And I hear all the shows have been that way, have been sold out, and you know, you all are playing to, like, standing room only in Arlington. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. We've been fortunate enough to add shows. Normally when we come in, we do Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday. But we've added, like, I think 3 shows since we've been here. So
no,
it's been great, man. This is a wonderful city, man. Beautiful people. Everybody's just so engaging and loving, and just as we go around the city, everybody's just so nice, man. They want to give you things. Here, man, have some barbecue. Here, have some this, some that. I'm like, I love these people in Texas. So you guys are just wonderful people down here, and I really do appreciate all the love and support from yourself and everyone else that I didn't have an opportunity to meet personally. I really do appreciate everyone.
Where do you go from here? Arlington, Texas tonight. Where's your next show? Because I'm an internet show, so I'm all over.
Okay.
Where do you go from here?
Well, I'm gonna be I'll be in Lexington, Kentucky on Tuesday, and then I'll leave from there, and I'll go to we'll be in Baltimore next weekend, Thursday through Sunday, at the Improv, Baltimore.
Wow, where are you playing at in Lexington, Kentucky?
I'm doing a private event for the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Officers.
Wow.
They're coming from all over the country. It's going to probably be about 10,000 different police officers, all African Americans. So I'm going to be performing with Midnight Star opening
up
for them.
Wow. And in Baltimore, what day is that?
And that'll be Baltimore. It's Thursday through Sunday next week.
And you're going to be playing where?
The Improv.
Wow, the Improv in Baltimore, y'all. We have a caller. We only have a few minutes. We'll try to take the call. Yes, sir, caller. Good evening. You're on center stage. Area code 817-209. Maybe they just raised their hand by mistake. So anyway.
Can I do this, though? I would like to invite people that enjoy gospel comedy and clean comedy.
Yeah.
Definitely go to my website, you know, SpikeDavisAndFriends.com. We're doing a gospel comedy cruise to Jamaica, and I'd like to invite people to go. I would love for you to come and hang out with us as well.
Wow, sounds like fun. Now tell us when the cruise is going to be.
It'll be February 25th through March the 1st next year. And all the information is right there on the website. You can make payments as you go if you want to just put down $75 to hold your cabin and then make your rest of your payments throughout the year. You can do that. And it's only like $399 for 5 days in Ocho Rios and Grand Cayman.
Wow, $399 for 5 days.
Uh-huh.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible cruise. I may have to try to make that, y'all.
Come on, hang out with us.
I might have to do that. Listen, y'all, that is going to have to be it. I mean, Spike, is that you have any final words? We're going to get ready to get out of here. Spike, it's been a wonderful guest, y'all. You have any final words, Spike, for the Arlington area about coming out tonight?
Yeah, I just want to say thanks again to everybody here in Arlington. And please, if you're listening right now, start ironing your clothes and get dressed and get out to the car and zoom down to the Improv. There should be a few tickets left where you can slide in on one of these last 2 shows. LaVell is off the chain. Very funny, brother. And I've had a great week as well. So come down and hang out with us, man. And I really do appreciate you for having me on your show today.
No, love your back. Listen, that's going to have to be hit, y'all, but we thank Mr. Spike Davis for coming through this evening and hanging out with us. I have truly enjoyed learning more about this brother. And like I said, go out to the Improv tonight. It's over on Curtis Mathis Way. That's right there at 20 and Matlock in Arlington, Texas. Listen, y'all, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.